We'd like to call this meeting to order tonight. We appreciate all of you who've taken time out of your busy schedules to come and attend this RAC meeting with us. It seems like a lot of the concerns that arise in the state happen within and around the central region, and rightly so. A good portion of the sportsmen also live here. And with a couple of things before we get going, we'd like to have the RAC members introduce themselves and tell which group they represent, and then we'll go ahead with procedures and conduct.
My name is Matt Clark, and I represent sportsmen.
Carl Hurst, I'm a sportsman rep.
Jacob Stew, I represent Goshu Tribe.
Tim Fair, at large.
Ron Nielsen, DWR, I represent John Fairchild.
Better looking than
you. Richard Hansen, at large.
George Holmes, agriculture.
Greg McPhee, elected officials.
Larry Fitzgerald, agricultural.
Chris Schmitz, non-consumptive.
Sarah Flinders, Forest Service.
And I'm Gary Nielsen. I'm a sportsman's rep. I'm also the chairman of the Central RAC. Michael Gates asked to be excused tonight, so we'd like to excuse him. For those of you who have attended meetings, this will just be a review. Tonight's the Bucks Bowls once-in-a-lifetime permit number, so we're anticipating some discussion. We'd like to recognize John Bear back there from the Wildlife Board. He's always good to attend these, so when we finally get to the board meeting, he has a good idea of what the flavor of this meeting has been and helps steer it in a direction I think you guys would be happy with. This is a public forum. You have the opportunity to express your opinions and ideas. We all have our own ideas, and so we'd invite you to express them as well as you can. We have, on as you came in, there's a table that has a card if you'd like to make a comment. How it normally will go is we'll have a presentation by the division that'll take anywhere from 5 to 15 minutes. Following the presentation, we will ask the RAC if they have any discussions or points of clarification. Then they can ask whoever made the presentation what any specific questions. Following that, I'll open it to the audience. And if you have any questions whatsoever regarding the presentation or parts of the presentation, this is the time to ask those questions. Following that, we will have a comment period, where I'll open it up to comments from the public. This is where those cards come in. If you fill them out and put the number of the item on the agenda that you'd like to comment on, and then I will call you forward to the mic. When you do come to the mic, I need you to state your name and whether you're representing yourself or whether you're representing an organization. If you're representing yourself, you have 3 minutes with which to make your comment. If you're representing an organization, you have 5 minutes to make your comment, and we'll time those to just give everybody a fair kind of shot at it. We do invite you to listen carefully to the comments others make, and if somebody said exactly the same thing you're gonna say, you can just acknowledge that and let somebody else have the time. Our first item on business tonight is to the approval of the agenda and the minutes. We've had a chance to read through the minutes of last meeting and found it accurate. And also, we need a motion to accept the agenda for the meeting this time. Motion made by Tim. Seconded by Carl. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. The Wildlife Board report. Last time we had quite a few things they were talking about. It was, if you guys remember, it was that emergency prairie dog one. That happened all the same night across the state. Went to the board, and the board deliberated similar to the way the RACs went. There was several motions that were made that kind of changed it just a little teeny bit. With the first motion was made to put on the action log a follow-up study on Oh, let me see it. There was some concern about the lead poisoning part of the prairie dog management part, and so there was was put on an action log to actually look at that and study that and see what's going on with that, see if there was any impact with regards to lead poisoning following the prairie dog management. Then there was another motion made to accept the prairie dog management plan as presented by the division. That one passed. There was another motion made to approve the new rule, which was the amendment for method of take, and that had to be an amendment to the previous one, and that also passed. At the very end, there was a following motion made to look at primitive weapon hunts and the differences between our state and the other states, and so the division was directed to prepare a report regarding what the season dates are, what the season types are, what kind of weapons are allowed. You know, for example, multiple power scopes on muzzleloaders, things like that, compare our state with the other states, and then come back with the findings of that study, and it sounds like people are thinking about that one. Anyway, that's the report from the board meeting. We'll next have our regional update. Dr. Fairchild is missing in action today. He's on a trip with his back watching his kids back east. We've have Ron Nielsen here that's going to present in his stead. Go ahead, Ron.
I'll try and be brief here, going through the programs. Under the aquatics program, it's basically that time of the year that the surveys are beginning for Columbian spotted frogs and other species. You're aware that there's northern pike in Utah Lake. We're working on a study with Utah State collecting northern pike. Anglers have been asked to turn fish in. So far, we've collected 30. They'll be gill netting Deer Creek and Jordan L reservoirs the first week of May. If they're always looking for volunteers to help with that. Proposed regulation changes that this group will be seeing coming up are they want to remove the special regulations for the ladders at Strawberry Reservoir, and they want to retain. There's been talk about the regulations at Utah Lake tributaries, and the recommendation is going to be retain the regulations that are currently there. And wildlife, the spring bear hunt season began April 4th. It'll run through June 5th. The difference is that it's any legal weapon now, no baiting. It is available. The Central Mountains Manti and the Nebo units are both limited entry, while the Wasatch Front or the Wasatch West offers a harvest objective opportunity. They've met several times with the working group stakeholders on the Wasatch Elk Unit management plan. I think there are people here that are familiar with that have been involved in that. I know members of the RAC have been involved in that. The sage grouse lek counts are underway on the Sheep Creek Mountains and Strawberry. Those are the principal populations that our region monitors closely. If you'd like to go on that, Del Lichty and Tom Becker are the contacts for those. They've just completed aerial surveys on sage grouse leks on Strawberry Valley, and obviously the winter deer conditioning monitoring ended early this year. The deer are in great shape, and right now we're anticipating a real high fawn survival. If you're familiar with the Anaconda fire, the bid closing for the weed spraying is closing, coming up real fast. There's an 1,100-acre lop and scatter project in Vernon scheduled for this spring. Should be very beneficial for the deer out there. There was a meeting held on April 7th with conservation organizations to allocate conservation permit funding. The weed spraying crew obviously are going to get an early jump on it. I'm sure you've seen your own properties growing, and they'll need to start early for the noxious weeds. There was a turkey clinic at Cabela's that was very well attended. I think some of you are familiar with that. And that got postponed. The community fishing program is ramping up. It's a busy time of year for them. Under law enforcement, they're looking to explore the need for an AIS
aquatic invasive species enforcement in the pet fish and reptile trade. That's always been kind of a touchy deal. Mainly they're going to focus on species that, if released, would actually survive. There are a lot of exotics that are illegal that if they were released, they would immediately die or quickly and not be able to reproduce. So they want to focus on the ones that present the greatest threat. Enforcement of the WMA access management plans are paying off well in San Pete County. The winter range is looking better there on the property that we manage. They've been busy with late-night walleye anglers at the mouth of Spanish Fork River, and they're coordinating with Parks and Recreation on law enforcement needs at Deer Creek with the recent findings up at Deer Creek Reservoir. So that's what I've got.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Our first action item tonight is the Conservation Sportsman's Permit Rule R657-41 amendment, and it's Justin Shannon, the big game coordinator, that will be addressing this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Justin Shannon. I'm the Big Game Coordinator, and tonight I'm going to present a rule change to R657-41, the Conservation and Sportsman Permit Rule. So to begin, this rule change is going to add clarity and consistency to both the Division of Wildlife and State Parks for mule deer and bighorn sheep permits on Antelope Island. What it does is it defines a lot of things that weren't in there initially when this program was started. So, for instance, Special Antelope Island State Park limited entry permits are now defined. And we've classified a mule deer permit valid on that unit as a premium limited entry permit, and then the bighorn sheep a once-in-a-lifetime permit similar to our other units. And in addition to that, permits and season dates will be approved by the Wildlife Board and held in a general drawing. The other thing that this change does is it provides a framework for the Division of Wildlife and State Parks to enter into a memorandum of understanding or a cooperative agreement. And the purpose of this MOU would be to establish season dates and the number of mule deer and bighorn sheep permits to be issued on Antelope Island. It'll also establish hunting procedures and regulations, protocols for issuing permits and conducting hunts for antlerless deer if we ever choose to go down that road, and then procedures and conditions for transferring revenue that's derived from conservation permits that are valid on the island. Kind of the take-home message with this is the DWR and Parks will coordinate annually regarding limited entry permits that are valid for Antelope Island. Another part of the rule change that's moving away from the Antelope Island stuff is essentially requirements that conservation organizations must abide by to enter into the program. So, for instance, they must be a nonprofit chartered organization or a 501c3, and they must promote the protection and preservation of one or more conservation permit species. So, for instance, if you're a conservation organization that is for the protection and preservation of brown trout or something along those lines, you wouldn't necessarily be eligible for this program because we don't have conservation permits specifically for brown trout. And currently there's no organizations in the conservation permit program that are affected by this change. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Justin. Any questions or points of clarification from the RAC? Richard.
Are the ones that currently run the convention, are they 501c3?
Yes, every organization we have in the conservation permit program is a 501c3. Yeah.
How involved is the parks in this process? I mean, up to this point, with number of permits, those kind of things. I mean, how involved are they?
No, they've been involved. You know, this 501c3. This doesn't change much from what we've done in the past, other than it clarifies the sideboards of how we do it. Generally, what we do is we meet with Antelope Island, talk about the season dates, number of permits. They really haven't changed. One general draw and one conservation permit, since the inception of this program. But no, we work with them quite often. The biggest thing is I think it gives some guidance to both of our boards, the Wildlife Board and the State Parks Board. It spells out which boards are responsible for setting permits and season dates, because in the past there was confusion, and so both boards were trying to set dates, and this will help alleviate some of that. So.
Hey, Justin, on Antelope Island, do we ever anticipate seeing an increase in tag numbers? I know when they first put it out, it was kind of a specialty one.
Yeah. But potentially. I mean, this rule would allow for it, and essentially it says if we go down that road, that DWR and State Parks would jointly agree to that and take it to our respective boards, yeah. So.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions from the RAC?
In the near future, though, I don't see anything
probably
for
not.
Next year or anything, but, yeah, it's possible.
Okay. Richard.
Have you ever considered doing a management tag for Antelope Island?
No, it doesn't mean it's not off the table, but to my knowledge, we haven't had those discussions. There's so few permits that I think we've just allowed the hunters to take what's there.
Yeah,
so,
I just
yeah.
know that I've been out there, and there's some big three-point bucks out there.
Yeah.
The diabolical things.
Any other questions from the RAC? Questions from the audience? Are there any comments from the audience? I don't have any. Do you have a card? Thank you. State your name and your organization at the mic, please.
It's good to be with you tonight. John Larson with Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife. We just would like to accept the division's plan as presented. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments from the audience? All right, we'll bring it back to the RAC for your deliberation.
I'll make a motion that we accept the division's recommendation as presented.
I'll second it.
Motion is made by Richard, seconded by George. All in favor? Motion passes unanimously. Our next item is an action item. It's the Bucks and the Bulls and once-in-a-lifetime permit recommendations, and we'll hear from Justin Shannon on that one as well.
Okay, thank you. Tonight I'm going to present the Bucks Bulls once-in-a-lifetime permit recommendations for this upcoming season. To begin, we'll start with deer. This graph depicts the harvest that we've had on general season buck hunts over the last 10 years or so. And as you can see, in 2006 and 2007, we had really high success rates and harvested a lot of deer on these units. And then we had a lull there for about 4 years. The last 3 years have crept up, and even with cuts in permits, we're still slowly climbing up in the number of bucks harvested each year. Fawn production and trends, going back over the last 15 years or so, saw a pretty good decrease in the early 2000s, climbed our way out of it, and the last 6 years we've been pretty stable between 61 and 65 fawns per 100 does. Buck-to-doe ratio trends over the last 20-plus years or so. In 1993, 1994, we were running about 8 bucks per 100 does on general season public land units. And then we, late 90s, early 2000s, climbed to about 15. And we hovered back and forth around that number for quite a few years. Pretty good increase in 06, came back down. But the last 3 years, our buck-to-doe ratios have really increased on these general season units. And right now we're currently over 21 bucks per 100 does on public land units for general season. So with that background, our recommendations for general season permits is to increase by 2,250 permits for a total of 87,050. And on the 30 units, we're recommending a decrease on one unit, no change on 17, and then increases on 12 other units. I'm going to present these a little different. In the past, I've kind of thrown these tables, and it's a lot of information. And for this year, I've broken it down by region, so we can spend more time on the central region, for instance, and go pretty quickly through some of the others. So what we have is, on the left, we have the various units, and then the objective, what we're managing for, 15 to 17 or 18 to 20 bucks per 100 does. the three-year average. And if it's highlighted in green, we're exceeding. Thank you. We're exceeding our three-year average. And if it's in white, we're within the sideboards. And if it's in yellow, we're below. The buck-to-doe ratio trend is just what our buck-to-doe ratio was this last year relative to the year before. And then in this second-to-last column, 2014 tags, that's what was the Wildlife Board passed last year, and then 2015, what we're recommending for this year. So for the northern region, we're recommending an increase on the cash by 250 permits. For the central region, we're recommending increases on the Central Mountains Nevo and the Wasatch Mountains West, both of which are exceeding their buck-to-doe ratios. For the southern region, every one of these units is at or exceeding their buck-to-doe ratio objective, and we're recommending increases on the Beaver, the Fillmore Pavant, Mount Dutton, Zion, Monroe, and Plateau Boulder Kaparowitz. The southeast region, we're recommending increases in permits on the Central Mountains Manti Santa Fe unit and no change on the remainder. And then finally, for the northeast region, we're recommending a decrease on the North Slope, but increases on the South Slope, Yellowstone, and Wasatch Mountains of Inequin Current Creek. Moving to premium limited entry deer, that we have two types of permits on these units, on the Henrys and the Ponsagant. The one is your normal limited or premium limited entry permit, and the other is a management tag. And with that, we manage to a given age objective. And so what we're trying to accomplish is greater than 40% of our bucks need to be 5 years or older in order to maintain the quality on those units. And our three-year average on the Henrys is 72, and on the Ponsagon it's 58. So we're doing well there. And then on our postseason buck-to-doe ratios, we manage for 40 to 55 bucks per 100 does. And if we're outside the bounds of those, then we make alterations to the management buck permits. And on the Henrys, we're at 52 bucks per 100 does, and on the Ponsagon, 44 for a three-year average. So total permits recommended for this year. On the Henrys, we're recommending an increase of one from 48 to 49. It's not a true increase in the sense that we're adding more permits to the system. What we have is a landowner association that gets a buck tag every third year. Last year they had it. This year they don't. So instead of just doing away with it, we're giving it back to a public draw hunter. And then no change on the Ponsagon, 135 permits there. For management buck permits, recommending a decrease on the Henry Mountains from 35 to 30, and then an increase on the Ponsagon from 14 to 16. For limited entry units, what we have on the far left are the units. Again, the objective, what we're managing for, all limited entry units are 25 to 35 bucks per 100 does. And then this three-year average on the far right. And so we have two units, the Bookcliff South and the Diamond Mountain, which are exceeding, and then two units that are below, the Fillmore Oak Creek and the Dolores Triangle. And the others are within the sideboards. So for limited entry permits, not a lot of change, not a lot of movement going on. The ones that I'd like to highlight are the North Slope Summit right here with 200 permits. This is a hunt that occurs to try to take advantage of deer that migrate early out of the state into Wyoming. In the past, they've been known as high country buck hunts. We'd like to reinstate that. And then on the West Desert Vernon, recommend an increase of 10 permits from 181 to 191. In addition to that, we have limited entry late season muzzleloader hunts that occur on general season units. And those six units are listed on the far left, and we're recommending a total of 46 permits spread out throughout these six units. So to summarize, limited entry permits, we're recommending an increase of 257 total permits, the bulk of which will occur on the North Slope and is attributed to these late season muzzleloader hunts as well. The other thing that I wanted to highlight are the multi-season permits. We're recommending 25 of those. And those are essentially where, with a limited entry tag, you can hunt archery, muzzleloader, and any weapon. And that's something new that we passed this last November. Moving on to elk, for general season, no changes to the spike in any bull permit numbers. For youth any bull, we're recommending an increase of 200 permits to give youth a greater opportunity to harvest. And on the late season youth any bull, recommending a decrease of 5 permits. Last year, the statewide success rate on spike elk hunting was 13%.
Usually just
Generally, what it is the way that that's set up is if it's under 20%, then we keep the permits the same at 15,000. If we ever exceeded 20%, we would recommend decreases to the spike. That's why that's important. It's usually between 13 and 17%. So, moving on to limited entry elk permit recommendations, we're recommending an increase of 96 total, of 2,938 for our limited entry units. If you look at our 7.5 to 8-year-old units, we're recommending a decrease in 6 permits. The thing that I was pretty excited to see this year were the age trends. Every one of these units jumped up, it was trending in the right direction, and we've cut permits on this age class over the last 4 years, and we're starting to see some of that age increase as a result. For the 6.5 to 7-year-old units, we're recommending an increase on the Book Cliffs in the Southwest Desert and a decrease on the Central Mountains Nebo. The difference is a total of 9 permits being increased. For our 5.5 to 6-year-old units, these are our largest units in the state. Most of the permits are found here. We're recommending an increase of 4%, 65 permits total. And every one of these units are exceeding or at their age objective that they should be. And the bulk of the increases are coming on the LaSalle Mountains and the Wasatch Mountains. That's where those recommendations are being made. And then finally, the 4.5 to 5-year-old units recommending an increase in permits on the Cache Meadowvale, Cache South, and the Ponsagant, but a decrease on the Cache North, and overall an increase of 28 permits. Moving on to Pronghorn, recommend an increase of 23 permits statewide. With that, there's a decrease in the any weapon, and the reason that's there is because last November we put a couple more units in that are eligible for a muzzleloader hunt, and so some of those any weapon hunts are now into the muzzleloader, which is why we jumped from 40 permits to 87 to provide that additional opportunity. And then finally, our once-in-a-lifetime permit recommendations. Really not a lot of movement on moose, desert bighorn, Rocky Mountain bighorn, or mountain goats. The real difference would be in bison, going from 91 permits down to 80 would be the division's recommendation. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Justin. Any questions from the RAC?
No, I'd like to speak on behalf of our tribe. Sometime whenever they make a new elk management plan, that I know the age class is like 5 to 6-year-old bulls now in the Deep Creeks. And we manage our bulls to like 8 to 9-year-old bulls. We focus on nothing but trophy hunting. That's what we focus on. So in that regards, if the state is managing it for lower class type of bulls, we're not balancing out the system when we're trying to focus on an older class age of bulls when the state's doing a lower class age. So that's just a recommendation. Sometime when they start doing another management plan, we'd like to bring it back up to the 8 to 9-year-old class bulls.
Okay, so is there a question here anywhere? Is there a question?
No, just a recommendation. I don't know when to bring it up, but I just thought I'd just throw it out there.
Yeah, it's here in just a few minutes, and I'll make sure I call on you.
Okay.
Any questions or points of clarification from the RAC? Larry?
Is there any hunts the division manages to an 8 to 9-year-old bull?
No, our highest age objective is this one right here, the 7.5 to 8-year-old units. So. But this unit's certainly one we can have a discussion on when we do our statewide elk plan, which will be this summer. We're going to discuss all these units and see where the best fit for these age objectives are going to be. So that's certainly a conversation we can have.
George?
In your opinion, is there much difference between a 7.5 to 8 and a 8 to 9-year-old bull other than a year?
It's just for every age you increase, it's harder. You've got to cut a lot of permits to get there. You've got to limit that opportunity. And the further you get from zero, the more opportunity you got to cut to get there. So we can have the conversation. I don't know if a 8 to 9 year old bull would fit in our management plan, but we can take a hard look at that unit. Sure.
So to clarify that, if you raise that objective up to 8 to 9, you would lower the numbers down to where it's like it's getting impossible to draw from it right now.
Yeah.
So it would make it harder. It would be less commitments.
It would essentially, yeah. Correct.
Any other questions? Go ahead.
Just a couple questions on specific deer units. You've got some that are under the three-year average, but we're recommending more tags, specifically mm-hmm. the beaver and the cache. And then you've got 9 mile, which is quite a bit above, but we're not recommending any increase on that. Just a couple of specific.
Yeah, no, that's those are good questions. And one thing we do is with this new statewide plan, part of the change that we made was to look at trend. And so if a unit, one reason we did that is we had a unit last year where it went from $20 per 100 does to 16 down to 11, but the three-year average was still within the 15 to 17 guidelines. And so we just wanted to be more realistic and say anybody can see that trend. We want to get out ahead of it and cut permits. On the beaver, this one's an interesting one because a few years ago we were at 3,500 permits, and then we went down to 3,150 and then down to 3,000. And the population's really responded. Our buck-to-doe ratio has been increasing every year since then. But you're right. It's at the lower end, and we were just trying to take trend into account on that one. The 9-mile unit, that one is heavily dominated by private lands, and access is a real issue. And on some of these units, you could issue more permits. I'm not really convinced you would harvest more deer. You may just frustrate the many hunters that are found on that limited public land. That's the reason for no increase there. And help me, what was the third one that you...
I think that's all of them.
Okay.
And then I think we all got an email on the Stansberry Bighorn Sheep unit, a recommendation to go from 3 to 4 tags. Can you talk rams and classes and everything on that unit?
Yeah, we can...
You want to talk to Tom?
Yeah, let's let Tom tackle that one. So.
Because his numbers and the numbers we know that are not.
Yeah, we have a couple of different conflicts with the data that they have on the S Drive and in Salt Lake and what I have on my flight data from a couple of years ago. I don't have, 2 years ago, if you added the class 3 and 4s together, I have 10 instead of 18. And the last 2 years, we've had 3 permits and we've killed 6 class 4s out of those. And we've had a little bit of a disease issue, and I know I've lost at least 1 8-year-old in that. So I'm a little concerned about putting too many permits out there right now until we get. We were supposed to fly this year, the weather didn't cooperate, we didn't get it done. We are on the schedule for next year's flight, so I wish we'd stay where we're at until we get a flight.
Okay, thank you.
Matt, can you just explain the reason for the dramatic increase in the youth, any bull elk hunts?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. We're gearing up to redo the statewide elk plan this summer. And so as I was reading through the strategies a while ago, looking at what it was that we'd be up against with this plan, there was a strategy in there that said for the division to provide more youth hunting opportunities. And as we got looking at the number of permits that we're issuing for the youth on this particular hunt, we have close to 5,000 youth that are applying and only issuing 300 permits. And so as we talked it over with the regions, especially the Northeast region where the bulk of these youth hunters go, they were saying, we've got so much opportunity, we can increase this and do a better job of providing that. And the other regions felt the same way. So that's all it is it just a chance to give the youth a little more opportunity.
Do you know what the success rate of that hunt is?
I want to say off the top of my head it's about 30-35% right in there, 30 to 40. I can pull it up. I don't have that right now. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Any other questions or points of clarification from the RAC? Okay, seeing none, I'll open it up to the audience for questions. Remember to state your name.
My name is Roy Hampton. I'm just representing myself. I've got some questions on your elk numbers. Okay. There's 5 units I noticed that with their older age objection with no increase. And then you take the Wasatch, and it's over objection, I understand that, and it's increased 57 tags.
Yeah.
So my opinion, you're picking on the Wasatch, and I want to know why.
Sure. Yeah, it's very personal.
Well, the man tag's the same example. It's over, no increase.
Yeah.
So here, corners, it's
sure.
Over.
If you look at these age objectives here, what we have is, for the most part, most of these units are either at or just slightly over. So we're talking 6.1 age versus a 6.7. And the thing mm-hmm. with the Wasatch is we keep throwing more permits at it, and the average age continues to increase. And we're drastically over on the Wasatch. Mm-hmm. The reason for no increases on the West Desert, kind of like we were just talking about, there's limited access, there's different strategies going on. Mm-hmm. And the box elder pilot, that there's so few elk there that really we did an increase of two. I mean, but it's not, and one of those is a landowner association permit, so it's not reflected. But we're trying in areas that we feel like we're there or just slightly above, we can kind of take a less aggressive approach. Mm-hmm. And we've done pretty good increases on these areas. I think last year we did a similar increase, 5-7%.
Wasatch went up 50 yep. tags last year. And the reason why is 2 years ago we didn't have a late hunt. Mm-hmm. It was at 6.3. It was right almost at our objective.
Yeah.
To where them tags would have leveled off and we quit increasing. Put a late hunt on there and it's went up every year. If you look at that, it's went from 6.3 to 6.9 to 6.8, averages out at 6.7.
Sure.
So that's exactly why it went up. And, you know, we was at 600 bulls then.
Yep.
Now we're going to be over 760 bulls. So.
Yeah, I guess if those trends were going the other way, if we were seeing declines, we'd feel like we can back off and be patient like these other ones. But,
right.
I mean, if we're that far over, and we have such limited opportunities to hunt elk in the state, and we're only issuing 3,000 limited entry elk tags,
I understand. Then
I think we ought to identify the areas where we can provide more opportunity and do it. That's all it is.
So. Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Go ahead, George.
What is the success rate on these tags on the Wasatch?
Let me find out. Ken, is that something you can pull up? Which hunt?
Total success rate.
Archery's 35. Rifles 85 and muzzleloaders.
Okay, how many permits were issued and how many were harvested total?
I think that
tells a better answer of the success rate.
Let us find out. Let us do some digging and we'll get report back. So the number of permits and the number of harvest.
Yes.
Okay.
That would be the total success rate.
Okay.
Are there any other questions from the audience?
For the Wasatch, do you have that?
I have a question, just curiosity. So as the age of the animal gets older...
Come on up to the mic.
And please state your name when you get there.
So as the age of the animal gets older, like, say, 3 years to 4 years or 5 to 6, 6 to 7, how many tags do you actually have to issue to knock it down? Like, obviously, the younger age needs a larger amount of tags.
Right.
I mean, do you have to, you know... I'm just curious what that ratio is to get that extra, like, with his statement, up to 8 or 9 years, how many tags you have to cut to allow that age to increase? Obviously, from 3 to 4 would be less than 8 to 9.
It's hard. We look at those on a unit by unit level because success rates are different for each one, and then also the number of permits as well. So on some units that are larger, you might have a different ratio than a unit that's smaller. Different success rates play into that as well. I guess the best way to answer that is similar to what you said. If you're trying to get to a 7.5 to 8 year old bull, your cuts have to be quite a bit more than if you're going from a 4.5 to 5.5 year old bull. And it's really hard to tell you exactly what that is for each unit, but it's more. And one reason is because if you have 94% success survival rate on an elk, you know that has a chance to die naturally year after year after year. Whereas if you're at a 4.5 to 5 year old elk, your chances of dying aren't as great. So the longer lived you are, that stuff has to come into account as well. So do you have anything to add, Kent? Go ahead.
Sorry. Kent Hersey. It's
It's a function of you have to kill less bulls per age class as you go up. You kill fewer bulls, and you also increase percent success. So it's a function of those two things working together. On average, you'd see about two-thirds of the permits being issued for every 1 year age class you go up. So if you're issuing 100 tags for a 6 to 7 unit, for a 7 to 8-year-old unit, you'd be down to about 67 tags.
Could you state your name, please, into the mic? Casey what?
Casey Sorensen.
Thank you. Any other questions from the audience? I have two comment cards. Our first one is Roy Hampton. We'd have to ask him to step forward and
My name is Roy Hampton. I'm representing myself. I would be opposed to increasing the tags on the Wasatch and leaving that at 703.
Thank you. Ben Louder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ben Lauder representing the Utah Bowman's Association. We support the division's proposals as presented with two exceptions. Those exceptions are on the Vernon deer unit, the limited entry Vernon deer unit. We'd like to see those tags stay at the 2014 numbers. Reason for that is we're still within the objective, the buck to doe ratio objective on that unit, so we'd like to see those tags remain the same until we breach the top end of that objective. And then also on the beaver general deer unit, same thing, we'd like to see those permits stay the same as 2014 for the same reason that both last year's, both the 2014 counts and the three-year average are still within that three-year objective. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ben. Next comments from Dave Woodhouse.
Dave Woodhouse, I'm just representing myself today. I'd ask you to keep the Wasatch bull tags at the same number as last year. We did the same approach with the Manti a year ago when they asked for increase. We kept it the same, and you know it seems to look okay on the age class. And I'd like to see that on the Wasatch because what's coming up next is the antlerless elk tags, and I think, you know, there's the part of the Wasatch that we're going to be addressing that needs some help. And, you know, with the, like they said, with the late tags, that's really bumped up the age class because it's a lot easier on the Wasatch to find those elk at that time and to find the best bulls, which happen to be your older ones. And also I'd recommend that we keep the Vernon at the same tag numbers, no increase on that unit, as it's just now starting to come around and have a little bit of an increase. And, you know, I haven't talked to anybody that's been hunting it that's really seen much of an increase that's blown away as far as the buck numbers go. So I'd recommend that we keep it where it's at. Thanks.
Thank you. Any other comments from the audience? Go ahead.
Notated on my first card I gave you. Maybe that number's on there.
I'll get it. Go ahead.
John Larson with Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife. We accept the division's plan with the following recommendations: that on the Vernon Southwest Desert unit, the Manti unit, Zion unit, and Beaver unit, general season, the buck deer permits stay the same as 2014 for the very reasons that Dave Woodhouse just mentioned. Just feel like they're just coming in now, and I think they need more of a chance. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any other comments from the audience? Justin, are you available for a second?
Yeah, quick update. It's about 38% on the youth, any bull hunt. And then we harvested 670? Oh. And then on the question on the Wasatch, we harvested 448 bulls out of the 670 hunters that actually went. So,
okay, and so there were 743 permits, but only 50 of them basically didn't go.
Yeah, and that happens on a lot of our hunts. Guys get it and
so you
just don't
control that.
Yeah. So.
Is that about your lowest?
lowest success rate?
No, I think our 4.5 to 5-year-old units have the lowest success rates.
And 6,800. Yeah. Was it 448 that were harvested?
448, six. Yes. 670.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I know you mentioned earlier the reason you'd increase those was because of your trend data that mm-hmm. had turned the corner, was on its way back up.
Yeah.
Does it seem like it's survived, or it's increased enough to suggest increasing permits, or are we staying ahead of the deer, or what?
Certainly on the Central Mountains Manti, if I can go there real quick, that's one where, yeah, that when you look at the Central Mountains Manti, when we went unit by unit in 2012, we ended up cutting, it was over 2,000 permits on that unit in the Santa Fe swell unit as a whole. And one reason we did is because we said, we know our buck-to-doe ratio is low, let's build it. When we get it back, we can recommend these increases. This last year on the Manti, the buck-to-doe ratio was close to 23, and the 3-year average is 19. And so we did those big cuts to get that growth, to get that increased buck-to-doe ratio. And now, that's one where certainly we can provide a lot more opportunity. The beaver and the Vernon, they're right. They're within the sideboards of the plan. So if those aren't increased, it's not like they're outside and really, really make a strong case. We were just looking at trend on those. And then what was the other unit? Was it the Zion? The Zion unit, our 3-year average on that's 23, 24 bucks per 100 does. And we've done slow increases every year on those permits by about 100. And that buck-to-doe ratio is still really high. So, if that helps you at all.
Yes, thank you. Any other comments from the audience?
Can you speak to the Vernon deer on that? The buck-to-doe average is right at the bottom, but we're recommending additional permits.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to pull this up, because you're right. We for 2 years we were under on that buck-to-doe average, and there's some things with that. I mean, the timing of classification. If you don't get there before those deer migrate, you still get a classification. It just may not be a true representative of that buck-to-doe ratio. This year, the biologists felt really good about that classification, and the fawn production survival that we're seeing out there is really good. And so we feel like we're at the upper level, even though our 3-year average is only 25. Right now, we're at 33, and we feel like that's pretty good. But Tom, you have anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, essentially a lot of that is based on what's happened. The year before was, we look at the success rates and stuff like that, but when I look at fawn survival 4 years ago, which is basically what we're trying to harvest now, which is a 4-year-old buck, we did see quite a dip in the survival rate. It was about 44%, and that's the radio collar deer we have on the neighboring unit, the Oker Stansbury, than that year. We've since increased the fawn survival's gone up. This year, we should be seeing 4.5, 93% that following year, and then 77 and 78% for the last few years. So we should be on the increase as far as our buck numbers. We did see a dip this last year. It's the only time we've ever seen it. We lost almost an entire year in the harvest. We were harvesting, like I said, a 4 or 4.5-year-old on the average. We did drop to a 3, 3.5-year-old. But when you start looking at what happened 4 years ago, it kind of explains a little bit of that. Nothing's really changed a lot when you look at the percent success as the harvest or the hunter's success. The only one that shows any difference is the archery. Last year it was 55%. This year it was 37%. But the muzzleloader was 56 last year, 61 this year, and the any weapon was 83 last year. It's 84 this year. And the model shows that the population is increasing. I thought it was a modest increase of 10 permits. I didn't think it was going to be a big deal.
Larry.
Tom,
We have reduced permits over the years, and that was a response to, you know, the buck-to-doe ratios.
So the deer have, just like you say, we had the last 4 years, the fawn population
We are rebounding, and so, you know, I think we've seen our low, and we're on our way back.
Trying to get the number back up to
what? I actually don't think with the additional 10 permits, we're going to see any change in the actual total harvest of the bucks.
And when you talk about the archery, the low success rate on that, do you have to take into the consideration of weather?
It could have been anything. Yeah, it could have been weather. It could have been it could have been Walmart hunters. It could have been who knows. It's one of those things that's second guessing, and we don't usually try to do that. We go with the numbers. That was the only part that had any change was the archery hunt. It was 55 last year, 37. I don't know why. But the other ones stayed right in where they've been in the last few years, 50, 60, 55, 60%.
Has the division ever considered there's a lot of hot deer out there. There's 3 points out there that are 28 inches wide, and nobody wants to shoot them.
I've thought about that, and I'm a little reluctant to do that because it is a fairly large percent of the buck numbers that are out there, and I don't know that we gain a whole lot in doing it. It's a unit that's shows a lot of impacts from drought in the summer range, and I don't know.
That's the consideration of the year we might have going into next winter.
Larry lives in off grass, so
well, they don't harvest one deer this year.
They may not be there next year. Yeah. Some of the stuff that we've seen on the collaring deers, they're not in the best of shape. But they're not in the worst in the state. So, and the Vernon tends to be a little bit worse than the Oak or Stansbury's, which is where we're collaring the deer, as far as that goes. And so their fat indexes going into winter are probably as low as they've been. And when I look back in the 92, 93, some of that data I was getting off the check station when we were doing check stations there was nil. I mean, there was hardly any fat on them at all, and we're right in that ballpark right now. So if we have a winter, we might lose a fair number of them, and we're going to start building right back. I mean, we'll start from scratch like we did before. I mean, we've come a long way in the last 10 years, and all the models are showing that it is increasing. We're putting on a few hundred a year. I think we put like 400 on this last year, according to the model, but the model gets better every year we start using it, and I think we're coming up. If we have a bad winter, then we kind of may start all over again. Anybody else?
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
My question goes back to the Wasatch elk numbers. The point was made that the late hunt could have or may have affected that age class, average age class harvest. Seems like a valid point. Is that one of your determining factors on that, on the increase? And do you think that that's a legitimate concern, a legitimate point?
Regardless of when we allow hunters out there, whether it's late or early, if they're killing on average 6.7-year-old bulls on a unit that we should be managing for 5.5 to 6, we feel like we have avenues to increase. Because even if we continue that moving forward and that quality of bull is being harvested, then it's exceeding that objective. So it's certainly something that we consider, yeah.
Do you keep any data on the time of harvest and the age, and I guess it goes along with Greg's question.
Yeah.
Does it tend that older bulls are harvested on the later hunts?
Yes. Kent, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but are you got it there? Okay.
So Roy's correct. I mean, we did harvest, on average, 7.3 was the late hunt. It was 6.8 for the early hunt. That being said, the majority of the tags are on the early hunt, not the late, and they are weighted by how many permits are out there. So it's not influencing that much.
Okay, but 7.3
versus 6.8.
But was 6.8 the average?
It was the overall average. That was the early rifle hunt average as well.
I have a hard time following those figures, then, if one of them is 7.3.
Well, we factor in the archery hunt and the muzzleloader hunts as well.
Okay. That
and the Wasatch actually has more archery tags. It has 30% versus 25 is the standard, and the muzzleloader is 20 versus 15. The archery average age was 6.9, which is one of the highest in the state, so...
So it isn't just the late hunt that's increasing the age index.
No, all hunts, all hunts were high.
Okay.
I'd like to make a comment on that.
Would you step to the mic, please? Thank you.
My name is Roy Hampton. I got a question on your... It's not mandatory you turn all the teeth in, right? So my point asking that is... If any one of us killed a four-point bull, we wouldn't be interested in what the age was. If you kill a six-point, you want to know the age of that bull. So I brought this a million times. I would like to see it mandatory that if you're going to hunt, you need to turn your teeth in. If that's how we're managing our bulls by age objection, why wouldn't you want all the teeth? Because I guarantee you, you're not getting them four-year-old bulls, and that's why we're getting such a high number on when you're getting six-and-a-half-year-old bulls, because everybody wants to know the age of them. And this isn't a personal thing. I've hunted this unit 3 years. I've been very fortunate to hunt this unit, so it's not... I probably never hunted again in my life, but the guys that are going to hunt it, I want to see some quality left there. That's my main objective here, so...
If you've been lucky enough to draw three tags, you'll probably get another one.
No, nope. I did. Sounds like luck is with you.
But I don't know if the age objection is this place to bring it up. I know the board's going across the management plan, so maybe that's the place to bring that mandatory teeth. But that's why our number's so high.
We talked before. I was on the elk group last time when we did the elk plan, mm-hmm. and we... proposed that very thing, and they've had just have a really hard time getting people to cooperate, and they said, so what would you do? And said, well, don't allow them to put in on the next hunt, make them ineligible to apply. But yeah, it'll come up again, because it's especially if we're going to base this serious amount of numbers on the tooth data.
One other thing, in that elk committee, we made it mandatory reporting. And in that reporting, you take time length, beam length on one side. Are you seeing, is that something we can get from you? Because that would be interesting to see if you're getting a lot of short main beams, and them's your younger bulls you're not getting your teeth off of.
We can certainly sit down and walk through that with you, because that's one of the things that we looked at with this was you have people that don't turn in a tooth, but they do give that information on the reporting. And so we've gone back and looked at it and looked for differences on points and time.
And you've not seen an extreme...
It's not a noticeable difference. Yeah. And when we're talking about having hunters mandatory, you submit a tooth, there's some issues with that. I mean, do you use the carrot or do you use the stick? And we've kind of shown, we've gone the route of the carrot just because of the stick. What do you do if you have a hunter that says, well, I meld in my teeth, the division just didn't get it, so we're penalizing a guy. And there's some real challenges with it that are social that
right.
we can discuss. Yeah.
But all your CWs are recommended to do all their teeth, right?
CWMUs do all their teeth. Is that correct, Scott? Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, they do.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. Any other comments from the audience? Step to the mic, state your name.
David, I did the Wasatch bull hunt 2 years ago.
Three.
I never even seen a bull. I've just come here for the fun of learning what this is.
Okay.
I never even seen a bull, and I hunted my tar off. I'm not trying to be disrespectful. I don't know what these guys are saying, but their numbers I'm kind of confused with, because we hunted day and night, and we were supposed to get this big tag. It took me 15 years. My dad put me in forever, and I don't know where these numbers are coming from. I think it'd be a good idea to maybe have, I've never heard the tooth thing before, but I think if you guys make it mandatory, I never even commented back on it. Like, I got fined, or I don't know what the correct wording is. Sorry, I don't do this. But you guys didn't let me put in for the next year. And I was like, that don't even bother me because it didn't affect me. Does that make sense? I'm like, I don't want to put in a draw again. My dad, my brother hunt big time. And I was like, it don't even matter. If I put in for 15 years and I came out with nothing, I mean, it was just like just the most disappointing thing. I didn't want to hunt anymore. And it was really weird to me to see how it would be really cool if you guys would make it mandatory for a tooth or something of that tag. I mean, if you want to hunt, you can turn in a tag, you can turn in a tooth. And I'm not a big hunter at all. I'm not a big hunter in any sort of way. I think it would be more fair to the public for what these guys are saying to get big elk, big deer. You can't just say you want to hunt, you shoot a deer, you get fined 1 year. I don't think that would be okay. I think it would be necessary to say, you guys want to hunt, you guys are responsible for what you took, you bring in a tooth. I think that would be totally fair. I'm not a big hunter, and I think that would make these numbers go super small. And I'm just saying my opinion. I don't want to piss anybody off. I don't know. I'm sure that makes some people really mad, but it would make these numbers so people would have more of a realistic number. If you want to hunt, why can't you bring in a tooth? I'm just curious what that is.
Okay, what's your last name?
I don't think so. I'm not getting in trouble. I don't know if I get in trouble. I get in trouble.
Oh, no.
No, okay, no. Sorry.
Spank.
No, I didn't turn my tab. No. I don't know if I get in trouble.
No. No, we just have to. It's a public record.
What? It depends if you wear your seatbelt when you drive home.
No, I'm just saying, when they're saying they got these big, big deer out there, I mean, the big elk on the Wasatch Hunt. I mean, we went there and hunted, and I went with my dad and my brother, and they're really good hunters. We hunted and hunted and hunted. And you drew a tag, you didn't get anything either, right? And we put in for 15, whatever. I mean, I can remember waiting every year for this big, glorious hunt. And on our any bowl tags, we got better luck going with our any bowl tags than we did with the big Wasatch tags. And we went up there, we did everything correctly and right according to the hunting stuff. And he was very, very mad at me that I had to turn the tag in. But I'm like, that took us this many years, paid a bunch of money, and I never seen a bull up there, and I seen so many hunters, it was incredible, you know. And I was like, "Have you guys see anything?" And I don't know. They're like, "No, we haven't seen anything." So I don't know where they're getting their big 7-point bull elk. If that's just because they found the old elk, so they want to take it in, is that what happened there?
Okay, I don't know. I know there's varying abilities in hunters and stuff, and elk are where you find them. That's always been true.
Yeah. But how can they want to make it mandatory to say you shot an elk, you can bring the deer elk in and just prove it to us?
Looks to me like it's heading that direction, so
okay.
I'll watch for it as well. Any other comments from the audience?
Sorry.
No, you're fine. Is that a hand?
I just got a...
Would you step to the mic and state your name, please?
Jeremy Allen. I was just wondering something you were talking about, the burning hunt, when the... Is that the one you're saying the elk go up into Wyoming?
No.
That
would be the North Slope.
North Slope.
Yeah, it's deer.
Okay. Yeah, I was just wondering if we work with Wyoming on that, because you were talking about increasing those numbers,
mm-hmm.
just because to get them before they go up there.
Well, what we did is, did we work with them?
Yeah.
Our biologists that border other units across the state, whether it's Colorado, Wyoming, we always coordinate with those biologists. But this is one where historically we had this hunt, and it got taken away. And as we did redid the statewide deer plan, we talked about creating more hunting opportunities, particularly limited entry hunting opportunities for Utahns. And this was one where we could do that. We can take advantage of deer that are migrating, and it's to create more opportunities for our hunters. So,
okay. Yeah,
we're fine. So.
Okay, thanks.
Anything else from the audience? I was actually glad to see him reinstate that, because all of those states that border us have a late hunt. and get those guys when they come across. All right, we'll bring it back to the rack for your discussion and entertain motions. I had quite a few guys that hunted the desert that were concerned about the fact that they were leaving the desert numbers the same. They had been seeing less and less and less deer, and these are families that have hunted out there 30 and 40 years, and they feel like, even though, and I said, well, we'll look at the data, and they said, well, the data shows only 1 year, and I said, well, they actually don't change it until they have data that verifies that there's a need, and anyway, so there's quite, but I got quite a bit of discussion about that. Also, quite a few of you guys got a lot of the same emails. They feel like the deer herd's just finally starting to recover, and so maybe not let's increase tags right away, just let it go for a little while and build the herds back up. But there was numerous ones to that effect.
If there's no more discussion, how about if I make a few small recommendations and then we follow it up with a large one on some of these units that we've talked about?
Okay.
And at least they'll get a vote on a specific area. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay, I'll make the recommendation that we keep the Wasatch bull elk, both early and late, at the 2014 numbers.
Okay.
I'm guessing that dies without a second.
Are you making that in a form of a motion?
That's, yeah.
Okay.
I'll put it in a motion and we'll see where it goes.
Okay. Motion by Carl.
I'll second it.
Seconded. All in favor? Seven, four against. Two against. Motion passes.
Okay. I'll make the motion that we keep the West Desert Vernon limited entry tags at 2014 levels.
I'll second that.
Just one second.
Just one second.
Did we get it?
No.
Did I miss one?
That's only 9 votes.
Right. There's 10 people, right?
Did somebody abstain?
Yeah, I raised my hand late, so I let her know which. Okay.
I apologize. Thank you.
Okay, I was right.
Okay.
Eight.
So we're good?
We're on 8 and 2.
8
okay.
and 2.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Would you restate your motion again, please?
Make the motion that the West Desert Vernon unit limited entry stay at 2014 levels for all the multiple hunts.
I'll second that.
Seconded by Richard. All in favor? 3-4. All opposed? Seven opposed. Motion dies.
Do you want to do some of the general entry ones? General deer, or do you want to go?
Unless you're ready to make a motion on the whole
for the whole thing, yeah, we've got to dice it up some more.
I'll make a motion that we accept the rest of the recommendations as presented by the division.
Second.
Motion is made, seconded by George, to accept the rest.
With the exception of the two that we've already voted on.
Well, actually,
one of them stays anyway.
Oh. However, we voted on those
only
two.
One of them passed.
Yes.
Okay. So we have a motion to accept the balance of the division's proposals, and it was seconded with the exception of the one on the Wasatch. All in favor? 7-4. That passed unanimously.
Mr. Chair, before we move on.
Go ahead.
If I may, the motion on the Wasatch was just dealt with the early and the late, if I heard it correctly. And I think what you meant was the entire permit recommendation. Is that correct?
I did, yes.
Okay.
All of the permits on that at 2014.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure I understood it. So.
Okay. Isn't that what he said?
I thought he did.
Okay. All right.
Maybe I heard it wrong. So.
No,
I just wanted to
heard it right.
Okay.
I think that's what Greg seconded.
Okay.
What?
There was all the permits.
The Wasatch was the same as 2014.
That's correct.
All permits.
All permits. Okay.
Yes.
Okay, I just want to make sure that we're square on the West Desert Vernon, that was part of your second motion, right? Because the exception failed, so when you said the rest of them, you included that one?
That's what I seconded.
Well, that failed, so it stays the same, right?
Yeah. But the I want to make sure that's what he stated.
All but the Wasatch.
Okay.
Right. Okay. Well, Justin.
Ready for the next one?
Well, yep. We have the analyst permit recommendation by Justin Shannon.
Okay. Okay, we'll start out with deer. This is a graph that I just got done showing in the last presentation. Again, the take-home message is that our production has been pretty stable over the last 6 years, between 61 and 65 fawns per 100 does. This is something that we presented last year for the first time through the RAC process. We got a lot of good feedback from RAC members and the public both. What we do is we go around the state to seven different units, and we radio collar does and fawns. And what it does is it allows us to estimate survival rates on these units. And so statewide, over the last 5 years, our adult survival rates have been between 84 and 86%, which is typically normal, both with this study and others that have been done in the West. But our fawn survival has been really, really good. If you look at 2010 and 2011, we're 52 to 53% survival annually for these. And then in 2012, it jumped up to 78. 2013, it was 78 again, and this last year it was 82. So our fawn survival and production, our fawn production has been stable. Fawn survival has been exceptional. So what does that mean for how many deer we estimate in the state? This graph is over the last 20-plus years, and wanted to show the decline that we saw in the early 90s and how we kind of climbed our way back out of that and some peaks and valleys along the way. But the last 3 years, our populations have really grown in the state and done very well. Right now, we estimate there's about 355,000 deer statewide. In regards to antlers, deer permits for public draw, over the last 6 years, we did a major reduction in 2011 and have stayed relatively low over the last 5 years. And this year, we're recommending an increase of 215 public draw deer permits, antlers deer permits statewide. These new hunts are proposed to reduce deer damage on private lands, and particularly on the North Slope Manila Philpico recommendation, then also the Circleville North and Circleville South in the southern region as well. And then we're also recommending a hunt for Panguitch Valley on the Panguitch Lake unit. So where are these recommendations for when you look at it at a unit level? The recommendations are to have increases on the North Slope, the Beaver, Mount Dutton, and the Panguitch Lake units for a total of 625 in addition to what was recommended last year. Moving on to elk, our statewide population trend over the last 15 years or so slowly been climbing in our elk populations. And this last year with the modeling efforts and looking at our harvest, we leveled off a little bit. These are going to be verified this next winter with surveys and the following winter as well to check and make sure our elk are where we think they're going to be. But right now we estimate there's about 81,000 elk in the state, and our population objective is just under 71,000 elk. For permit recommendations, this graph's a little different than how we've showed it in the past. The green bars are our public draw permits. Those are issued through the draw and put in for them and those types of things. Our yellow are the antlerless elk control permits. And the antlerless elk control permits are a permit that you can purchase at a reduced price. And if you have a buck or a bull tag or a once-in-a-lifetime tag that's valid for these units, you can buy this cow elk tag at a reduced price. And the idea behind this is to essentially increase harvest without necessarily adding more hunters to the landscape. And so as you can see with antlerless elk control permits, we're recommending increases to these. We're recommending adding three new units this year. One is on the Vernon, where the population objective is zero. So anyone that's out there hunting, please buy a tag and harvest an elk. And then we have 11 other units where antlerless elk harvest is just difficult to obtain, or we're struggling with crowding issues or those types of things. And this year we're recommending the Mount Dutton and the Pine Valley units come online as well. This is a little different than how we presented this in the past. I feel like when it came to antlerless permits, to tell the racks that we were at 17,000, it was tough to really know where those were playing out at. And so this is something new. What I wanted to do is break down by each region the units and where we're at relative to our population objective and the population estimate, and then permits that were issued last year and permits that we're recommending for this year. So in the northern region, we're recommending a slight increase of about 90 permits. And those will occur on the Cache, Ogden, Morgan Southridge, East Canyon, Camas, and North Slope Summit units. We're also recommending a new hunt, the Cache Valley Northeast Benches. In your packet, I think it's called Cache Richmond Hyde Park, but it's the same hunt. We had to change it because we already had a boundary that had that hunt, but that'll be a new hunt coming on to target depredating elk. For the central region, recommending decreases on the Central Mountains Nebo, Wasatch Mountains West, and the West Desert units, and no new hunts or boundary changes are being proposed for the central region. For the northeast region, recommend increases on the West Daggett and the Book Cliffs units, but overall recommend decreasing close to 2,000 permits. Most of these cuts are coming on the Current Creek, the Aviniquin, and the South Slope Yellowstone units. This year we're recommending a decrease of over 1,000 permits on the Wasatch unit as a whole, the West, Current Creek, and Aviniquin. And we're also recommending new hunts and boundary changes for the Book Cliffs Bitter Creek East, the North Slope West Daggett, which is just a boundary clarification, and a new hunt on Manila Philpico. The southeast region, again, a reduction of 85 permits, a few more on the Manti, with the bulk of the decreases coming on the 9 Mile Range Creek, and no new hunts or boundaries are being proposed. And finally, for the southern region, recommend a slight increase of about 60 permits with new hunts on the Beaver, Panguitch Lake, and Ponsagant units being recommended. For doe pronghorn permits, recommend a reduction in 25 permits. We had 669 last year, recommended 644 this year. And those cuts are occurring on the Cache, Morgan, Southridge, Ogden unit, about 25. And no new hunts or boundary changes are being proposed. Finally, for antlerless moose, no permits and no new hunts or boundary changes being proposed. And that's what we have for antlerless recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you, Justin. Any questions or points of clarification from the RAC? Larry?
This was explained to me, and it doesn't make sense, but the reason why you're lowering some of these numbers, tag numbers, it was explained to me is with the less number of hunters out there, the success rate may be higher. Is that?
Yeah. No, that's a good point. I probably should have focused on that a little more. What we saw is, as we were climbing with our public draw permits, like with this graph, our success rates on some of these units just continued to decline. And we were killing the same number of elk with more hunters. And so in an effort to not flood these public land areas with more public draw permits, it was just a way to say, let's get creative and think outside the box and say, if you already have deer and elk hunters that are going to these units, let's let them get some of our harvest as well. And you're spot on. I mean, adding more hunters doesn't always equate to killing more elk. Well, in some situations, it can completely push these elk out of areas that we want them to be in. So, yeah. So.
Any other questions from the RAC? Questions from the audience? Go ahead, John.
Oh, boy. John Bear, casual observer. On the Wasatch with our control permits, yeah, that has been a very, very hot topic.
Right.
Do we know, or do we have a good estimate of how many cows we killed on the Wasatch, and where we're trying to pressure certain areas and take pressure off of certain areas? Do you feel like those control permits are still the most effective way to do that when we really don't have any control about where that pressure is?
Well, what type of pressure are you talking about?
I'm talking hunting pressure, shoot the cows and chase them off public ground out onto the off private ground out onto the public.
So, no, that's a really good question, John, because on the Wasatch, what we're finding is because we have to manage to a population objective, we have to make recommendations that get harvest. But what we're seeing is our elk are growing more and more on private lands and very difficult areas to access, and then the areas that they were historically in are declining. And so we're seeing this shift. And candidly, I don't know if we have all the tools from a management perspective that we need to manage that population as effective as we can. With antlerless elk control permits, there's pros and cons. The pro is we're not adding more hunters. In fact, over the last 2 years, if this recommendation passes, we'll have taken about 2,400 public draw hunters off of that unit. But we're adding antlerless elk control hunters, which they already have a tag in their pocket, some of that stuff. So you can get the same harvest in instances without throwing more hunters, as was discussed earlier. But one of the cons is you can't funnel them into an area and say, here's your definitive boundary, this is where you're going to be at. The alternative is we go back to what we did a couple of years ago where we had a lot of hunts, late season hunts, and tried to hit some of these areas. And the complaints that we heard at that time were it's really hard to grow elk in Diamond Fork and some of these other parts of the unit where we want elk if you keep having these late hunts and throwing permits at it. So there's pros and cons to both approach.
And the ask one more. The reason I'm asking is you kind of hit on that. If we have control permits, you're basically having a cow hunt wherever the general season deer guys go.
Yes.
Okay. Which is public land.
Right.
Where we kind of want the elk to come out on. So it seems to me if we have elk growing on private, not on public, we want them on public off the private, yet we're putting all our pressure on the public. Aren't we kind of dealing backwards?
We are. And that's a fair assessment of that. But it's for a short duration. And what I mean by that is when you do antlerless elk control permits, essentially what you're doing is you're hitting them really hard the month of October, really. Well, it depends. Yeah, essentially your spike hunts, your deer hunts. But one of the advantages that I think is overlooked is it allows us not to call hunts in most of November, December, January. So we're giving these elk a place to come on public lands where we're not hunting them anymore. And we don't have, I can't think of many other places in the state where we stop hunting cow elk November 5th because that late season muzzleloader hunt ends that way. And so, again, it's a pro and con. Are antlerless elk control permits perfect? No, there's some flaws. Is having the public draw permits throughout the year like we had them before perfect? No, there's issues with that as well. I really think as a statewide plan comes up and we work with the committee on this, we try to get more tools for the division and for private landowners to get harvest where we need harvest. And I'm not sure we're there right now.
Do we know how many cows we killed with control permits? I'm sure we have somewhat of an estimate.
647. Yeah. So.
In that particular area or all over?
That would be the entire unit.
That would be the whole thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The Wasatch unit.
Yeah. 681?
Yeah. I have a question.
Okay.
On these elk, obviously some of them, a portion of them are going on private lands because they don't have pressure on them.
Right.
They've learned to do that. My question is, on these private lands, are you paying depredation payments to landowners?
In some areas, yes, we are. Yeah.
No. Okay. It's fair enough that we pay them, but I wonder if there isn't some way that you could get some leverage that part of that depredation payment is contingent upon them allowing a certain number of hunters on that property to pressure those elk and kill some of them and push them off. I'm just asking.
You know, one thing that we did. Oh, sorry, Larry, you got a question?
Well, on the depredation process, that's mostly on farm ground. It's not. Do you know of any depredation payments on range ground?
I don't know about range land. I think we're talking like Heber City and.
Yes. Yeah. We do give irrigated or cultivated based at.
go hard on these.
So I can't imagine that many elk being on irrigated ground, though. You know, but yeah. I mean, yeah. hundreds and hundreds. I mean, there'll be some, but
when that damage occurs, this is, I learned about this a couple of weeks ago. It's when they're the planting season and the spring season, they're the new growth on the field. They'll come in, and that's not during the hunt. And that, I mean, usually it's the small farmer guy. It's not the guy with thousands of acres. It's the small farmer who runs this whole situation.
This that may happen to border CWMUs.
So one thing I'm excited about is just, I'm not sure if this whole rack is aware of the public, but we put together a Wasatch Elk Committee for the very reason that John's talking about, where we're growing elk on private and the areas on public isn't there anymore. And that committee came up with some really good suggestions for the statewide plan to look at. And some of these things I felt like were really good ideas that I'm eager to discuss with the statewide committee and try to come back with recommendations as early as this November if we can change our rule and increase or get that plan finalized and get the buy-in for it. But we've got to find ways to target the right elk, because we're over objective. We have to kill elk by law, but we've got to work on getting the right elk. And one thing that we've done in addition to this is started a giant elk collaring study. And this is, I think we collared 130 or so elk with GPS collars. So we know their daily movements, where they're at. And that's one of the things that we've struggled to understand, is we know where these elk are at on the winter range when we find them. And so we say, guys, there's 8,000 elk. But the hunters come and say, they're not where we historically have seen them in October. And they're right. So we've got some knowledge gaps that we're trying to fill with some of this stuff. So.
Dave Woodhouse, question.
Yeah. As we talk about this public to private ground with the elk herds at 8,000 head, we've got a definite void of elk right up here, Hobble Creek, Diamond Fork, basically Highway 40 south, Strawberry Ridge, that area. And why are we not, we talk about putting pressure on them on the private lands, but on our CWMU antlerless recommendations right here, why are they so light on the elk numbers for their antlerless tags versus we're going to put, you know, possibility of 8,000 hunters on the Wasatch with elk tags?
I think that, I'm not trying to skirt your question, but I think it's probably best answered when we give the CWMU presentation where the permits and hunts are being proposed. It's there's challenges, you know, and CWMUs in many cases, if they're only 10,000 acres, they get a little bit of pressure and elk will leave them, and so you can't overdo it on that as well. And I know there's been a lot of conversations about, well, can't we just force CWMUs to have that continual pressure as well? There's a lot of things that we need to look at, and I'm not sure that that's the silver bullet, but it's something that we can try. I mean, Scott, if you want to speak to it or wait for the next presentation, either way.
Why wouldn't we, you know, if we're trying to move these elk out of those areas and back to the public lands, which, you know, from my experience, I know a lot of the cattlemen and the riders that are like, hey, we don't see any elk up here in Diamond Fork. We don't see them. And the hunters definitely aren't seeing them in the numbers they were. And, you know, why don't we take a year off from that public antlerless hunt, that control hunt south of 40, and try to move those elk back into that? Take the pressure off of them for a year. Why don't we try that?
Well, I think in some ways we have taken the pressure off, because if you remember, we had late season hunts all down here that went into October, or I'm sorry, into January in some cases. And essentially, as I was talking to John earlier, with the antlerless elk control, you do pound them because we have to get our harvest. But on the flip side, you're essentially saying, okay, no pressure most of November, December, January on this south end. And so are you saying just don't do antlerless elk control permits south of Highway 40? Is that what I'm understanding?
Yeah. For a year or two, let's see what happens with the elk.
Would you prefer calling for hunts down here? Because we have to get the harvest, and last year we barely got it with the entire year.
Well, you barely get it. Your late hunts that we pretty much eliminated now are,
right.
Even when we had them, the success rate was at 8%. I mean, it was minuscule. It wasn't doing any good.
But it was keeping pressure. I mean, it was making it
but
so
it was
those
pressure
elk
and elk that weren't there.
Yeah.
You know, it was putting people up on this end of the unit where the elk aren't. So,
yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Let's put the pressure over around the CWMUs and, in those areas. I would rather see you hold out. And why can't we do this? And you guys could recommend it.
Yeah.
Why can't we, take 500 depredation permits for this part of the unit? If we have trouble in the winter with elk coming down, we'll release those tags and shoot them.
We do that anyways, though, I guess
okay,
is my point.
So
we're trying to target elk that are in the wrong areas with our depredation permits. We don't want to grow elk on the backs of private landowners. So if we have those issues, we're going to do that regardless and get some harvest that way. Yeah.
So I'm just saying, why are we pressuring the elk that aren't there?
Those are not counted in these numbers. Is that correct?
What we have is public draw permits, which is what the racks are approving tonight.
I was talking about the depredation.
Yeah, no, we just... Division just issues those. Yeah,
and that's fine.
Yeah.
And most people are fine with that because nobody wants to see somebody's farm get ruined or anything. I know a lot of those guys,
right,
down in the south part of the county and whatnot.
But I think one of your problems has been that the winters we've had the last 3 or 4 years, they're not there at the time they can be depredated.
Which is good and bad in a lot of ways.
Well, so they may come other times when they can't be depredated.
Yeah.
But if we have those tags available, we could turn a guy's loose in the spring if we had to go shoot them. If the tags were there, and the elk come down.
But I don't think you're allowed to have a depredation permit after January 31st.
That's correct. We can't allow public hunt after January 31st. So, and you get one of these late winters where they get pushed down afterwards. That's where it gets really tough, is when we have a lot of elk and our tools are limited. So,
but if that was a big problem that late in the year, those tags, that rule would have been adjusted if that was a big problem.
It's a law that
I'm just saying. So,
this is a tough one, Dave, because I admit our recommendation isn't perfect. There's some flaws with it. But what we're trying to do is also be sensitive to what we heard a year and a half ago when they were saying, do away with these hunts. And we really haven't given that a chance to fully work either. I really hope that we can get something where, like a private lands only permit or something like that over the summer with the elk committee to really come with better recommendations than what we have. So,
okay. All right, thanks.
Please state your name.
Wayne Shelton, private citizen. I'd like to talk about the Wasatch West. In 2012 and 13, you had 1,450 antlerless elk permits.
Is there a question in this somewhere?
Yes, there's a question.
Okay.
The question is, I want to reduce further the Wasatch West antlerless elk permits. Because 4 years ago, it was 1,450, then last year it dropped to 340. And Justin's proposing just to drop it 20 more to 320. And given what David said, and I observed it as well last year, I was out there on the opening on the Wasatch West before daylight until 10 o'clock, never saw cow, never saw bull. I heard two bull elk screaming over in Strawberry Valley. That was it. I ride it all the time with my horse in the years past, and we used to see elk all the time, enjoy them, the cows and the bulls, and they're not there now because there's been too many elk, antlerless elk harvested, and I like it. My proposal is to have it reduced even lower to allow the elk to come back up.
Okay.
You're
welcome.
Can I speak to that for one second?
Any other questions? I know it's kind of mutated into a comment period, but we're not quite there yet. Are there any other questions?
Roy Hampton, I got a question on your control tags.
Mm-hmm.
How are you getting that number? How many cows you killed?
We do random surveys, and so we contact them.
So it's not mandatory on that control?
It's not mandatory, no. And they don't submit teeth, these items.
Are there any other questions from the public? Okay, we'll close the question period. I have some comments. Paul Davis.
Paul Davis. I'm kind of representing Paul Phillips. Paul Phillips was on the committee that Justin talked about for the Wasatch Union. He couldn't make it. He wrote a letter. He asked me to read it, but I'll just highlight it.
Okay.
For those of you who don't know me, I'm a retired game warden. I spent 16 years up on this mountain, primarily on the Wasatch Unit. And I can tell you right now, this unit is not good. This is the lowest number of elk I've ever seen on this unit. And I think both sportsmen will agree that the division says there's... When this meeting first started, the division said there was 10,000 head on the unit. When the meetings ended, they said there was 8,300. So there was a discrepancy of 1,700. And as a sportsman and someone that's worked this unit, there's no way is there 8,300 head of elk on this unit right now. But I'm not going to, I like these guys, I'm not going to call them liars or anything. But what Paul was talking about is, in 2009, we put 2,300 cow elk tags out there. And out of the 2,300, about 1,500 cow elk were harvested. Last year, in 2014, we put 6,600 hunters out there. And we killed approximately 1,660 elk. So we tripled the number of hunters to kill 160, 170 elk. And as sportsmen, we're kind of tired of the shock and awe management style. If you send those guys out, all they're going to do is, as John talked about, push them onto private property. In that committee, they did come up with some good ideas, and none of them were implemented in any of the recommendations here today, which upset quite a few of the guys over on that committee. So as sportsmen, people that, I mean, I spent a lot of time up there. Paul Phillips spends a lot of time. I know Larry spends a lot of time. You guys spend time up there. We don't believe there's 8,500 elk, and we would like to see this committee do away with the control permits. And if I could, Paul, ask me just to leave this letter that he wrote.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I have a question. Mr. Davis, where is the area we're talking about that we believe there's not 8,500?
The whole Wasatch Unit.
Okay, help me out. I know what I think is the Wasatch Unit. What are the boundaries?
Primarily from...
Downtown
Heber all the way over to New Shane.
Okay.
And then down Hollow Creek up to Wolf Creek.
Yeah.
Right there.
Okay, thank you. We have another comment from Ben Lauder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ben Lauder, representing the Utah Bowman's Association. Got three different comments I'd like to make tonight on the antlerless permits. First of all, we support the division's recommendations as presented. Secondly, Justin, I'd like to applaud you on your efforts with the new presentation, the new format that you put together on the presentation. I think it's great that we see those listed out on a unit basis, and I for one, really appreciate that, so thank you. And then finally... I'd like to address some of the comments and concerns on the Wasatch Elk Unit here. I sat on that Wasatch Elk Committee here in the past month. Was involved in a lot of that conversation, and as Justin alluded to, it's a hot topic for sure. But I don't believe that we have all of the tools in place yet to be able to apply the pressure to those private lands to move those elk back to public lands. I do believe that it's possible given the right tools, but right now we don't have them. The statewide elk committee is coming up, as Justin mentioned, this summer, and the committee has sent a handful of strategies that were discussed to that committee to be discussed and hopefully can be put into place to help address those issues. I've been involved with a fair amount of discussion on that, and if there's anybody here that has suggestions or advice on various strategies to give landowner incentives to allow access or to put pressure on those private lands to move those elk off the private lands and onto the public lands, I'm all ears, and I'd love to have that discussion with anybody who has those ideas. Thank you.
Thank you, Ben. Are there any other comments from the audience? Thank you.
Roy Hampton. I've spent a little time on this unit, and there is less elk on this unit than there was in the years that I've hunted it. And the issue keeps getting brought up on private ground. In the Walsburg unit, there's quite a bit of private ground on Okaberry's ground. Them elk are not there, and I don't know when they're getting pushed there. They're not there in the spring right now, and maybe 3 years ago, we seen 500 head on that. Last weekend, I seen 50 head. So there's a decrease in these numbers, and I don't know where they're seeing these elk, but they're not in the summer. They're not there. And I'm not just talking on the Walsburg unit. I'm talking Diamond Fork all the way down in the Kern Creek unit. I'll give you a good example. In 2006, in the Kern Creek unit, there was 35 bulls in one basin. In 2007, there was 25 bulls. 2009 was 5 bulls. This has gone,
sir.
Go ahead.
How can you know those numbers?
Because I counted them.
And you can count them. You see them all.
You bet. Okay. In 2006, we counted 35 bulls in one morning, in one basin, in the Water Hollow Basin. If you're familiar with that basin, it's a big basin. In 2008, we counted 25 bulls. The next, I went in there, had a bull tag 2 years ago. Went into that basin, the glass, never seen an elk. This unit is going down, but these guys keep saying there's up. And I'm not, it's not personal, but we're just not seeing them as sportsmen. We're not seeing the elk there, you know. So I just, the control permit, I think it's a great idea, but you need to know what you're killing. And I don't think the phone survey gives us an accurate number. That's a different debate. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you.
You have my... I wrote
down to this
on the card.
Okay.
Dave Woodhouse, and on this one I'm speaking for the SFW Utah County chapter. They've asked me to address this, and they would ask, and I would too, that we close the control, the antlerless control elk permits in the Wasatch unit from Highway 40 South. And the reason being is the lack of elk in that area. Now, I'm not as familiar with some of the areas as Roy was bringing up on the other side. I do know I've seen a lot of elk over there in the past, but I haven't been up there for a while. And on this side of the unit, I do know lack of elk. And I can tell you that because we've been in the airplane. My dad and my uncle fly it every fall, every winter for the Cattlemen's Association, looking for the elk. For the cows, and they always come back and they know where the elk are. And now the last couple of years they come back and they say, we're not seeing any elk. The elk are not there. The hunters, the late season hunters have said the same thing. The early season hunters saying the same things. That's what people are seeing. The riders on the Cattlemen's Association come back, John Meekum and a couple of guys, they're like, we're not seeing the elk in the waters. You know, they're not. We don't see them there. There's still some bulls, there's still some cows, there's still some elk. But they're just not there in the numbers they were 5-10 years ago. Maybe they were high at that point, but they're definitely low now. We keep getting told that, well, there's 8,000 head elk on the unit. We're going to raise the objective, and shoot to raise the objective in the next year, which will help things. But in the meantime, we've got a void of elk on this side. And the landowners of Hobble Creek have told us the same thing. They're not seeing the elk on their properties. They'd like to see some elk. You know, not so many that they're doing damage and all. And we're not asking for that. And talking with the biologists, with Covey and some of the others, they're coming back that, well, there's a lot of elk over on the north end of the unit, basically, in Wasatch County because of the private lands. Those are the answers we're getting. Well, that's where we need to concentrate the elk tags, because they say the elk have migrated because of the hunting pressure, and they're all on those areas in Timber Lakes and Wolf Mountain and that, where people can't hunt them. Well, if they truly migrate, I personally think most of them were shot and went in the freezers, and then they just grew over there because nobody's hunting them. But if they did migrate, let's put the pressure on and bring them back to this end. And that's my thought. I think it's something that can be done. It can be voted on. You know, we can do that. I know, you know, it's a simple boundary, Highway 40. That's one reason we pick it. It's a clean boundary, that part of the unit. So I'd ask you to address that, and thanks.
Thanks, Dave. Richard has a question.
Justin, can I ask something? Yeah. I want to know how confident you are in that population number.
Well, here's the issue. When we survey these areas in January on these winter ranges, we're counting the elk. There's no doubt about that. I mean, what incentive would we possibly have to fudge those numbers? We like to get beat up in the public, or, you know, the elk are there. But the concerns that these guys have are real. When they're hunting these areas, these public land units, they're probably not seeing the elk that were there historically. So that's why we're trying to do the study. We're trying to get more tools. We're trying to be very transparent and meet with the sportsmen and the landowners and say, okay, how do we solve this? And that's why the committees and stuff like that are being put together. I mean, that's the effort that we're trying to take. So, yeah, we're confident they're there.
I have one other question. On these Wasatch units, is there a possibility that some of these elk have out-migrated into adjoining units?
Potentially. And that's why with the collar study, and I don't want to take too much time on that, we're not just collaring elk in the Wasatch, but the neighboring units as well, because we want to make sure we get migration into the unit and out of the unit, and account for some of that stuff. There really is a knowledge gap between what is being seen during the hunts and what we're observing in our surveys, and that's what we're trying to bridge, that gap. So, yeah.
All right, you're up, Mr. Larson.
John Larson with SFW. I'd just tell you, we'd accept the division's plan as recommended, but with the exception of what Dave Woodhouse had mentioned on the Wasatch with the antlerless elk permits, those, if anything, should drop, in my opinion. And secondly, as a recommendation, just keep that laser focus, Justin, on figuring that public land to private land thing going. I think it was good to have the Wasatch Elk Committee in play, but that obviously didn't do enough, so let's keep the focus there.
Thank you. Any other comments from the audience? Go ahead.
Just one question, Justin. We talked about this committee. We talked about some ideas.
Yeah.
What will it take, or timing? What will it take to get those tools available to us?
I think what it's going to take is looking at it from a statewide with the statewide committee and saying what tools are available, because this isn't the only area that we have private lands or difficult access areas. My guess is this summer, and I'm hopeful that I can come back to the RACs in November with the rule change and potentially some other types of hunting strategies and in conjunction with the statewide elk plan. That's my goal, if we can make it all work and get the buy-in on it.
So just because the committee put those ideas out, it may not be legal to, or you may not be able to do it without a rule change.
Oh, it would certainly take a rule change, yeah, on some of the strategies that were proposed, but that's okay. We'll just take it through the process and try to make it work.
Question, clarification.
Go ahead.
Just going along, we've heard a lot of talk about the committee and that. So those, and just so that we're all on the same page, as a board, we don't vote on hunt strategies or rule change, things like that, until November. So we have through the summer to implement, come up with some plans on what was talked about in that committee, vote them in the November Bucks and Bulls proclamation, and then in this meeting next year, when we're dealing with these numbers, that's when those new strategies, whatever they may be, will be in play. And will take effect numbers wise. So it's not that we've blown them off,
no,
or that they haven't come into play, or we decided not to do them. It's that we haven't had the meeting yet where they would get put into play and where those rules would be changed so that we could use them. Is that right?
Yeah, no, that's okay. A fair way to say it. And I hope the Wasatch Elk Committee doesn't feel like we did blow them off, because what it was a timing issue. They were meeting in March, recommendations were due at that same time, so we can work through them internally, and they were still meeting later into that. So, you know, the timing wasn't perfect, but timing is seldom perfect. I would rather have Covey and Dax and these managers and biologists get together with this committee and say, how do we fix it? And it, you know, it'll take some time and discussion, but we're very eager to figure this out. So.
Well, they said their recommendations got forwarded to the group that'll be meeting this summer, true, to do the statewide elk plan.
I'm sorry, say that again.
Their recommendations got forwarded through to the group that'll be doing the statewide elk plan.
Yeah, I've John Fairchild took the minutes of that meeting, and so he has a list for me as a big game coordinator to discuss with with this. And I'm actually excited for it. I think there were some really positive things that came out of that. So,
yeah. All right, very good. Any other comments from the audience? All right, we'll bring it back to the rack for your discussion. Larry.
They want to relieve pressure by lowering, it's not just lowering tag numbers, it's the pressure of all the hunts, it's the pressure of all the public, it's the pressure of all the recreation that's going on in the Strawberry area. If you think back 10 years ago, how many more people are recreating than versus today?
In that area.
You take how many more off-road or four-wheel drive vehicles?
Raiders.
So if you want to relieve the pressure, it's going to be a complete and total shutdown of that area if you want those elk to come back to that area. And the elk right now, the gentleman was talking about Wallsburg. They're not down in Wallsburg right now. What's the elevation of Wallsburg? 5,000-6,000 feet.
Yeah.
Me and my boys went up on Kern Creek Mountain last weekend. The elk are at 8,000-9,000 feet.
Yeah.
We went to go shed hunting. The elk are still packing their horns, by the way, so don't go yet. The moose have lost their horns, so you can go look for the moose. The elk are still packing. That's where the elk are at right now. They're not in there. They don't need to be down in these lower areas. So.
Just because of the mild winter.
We have the non-existent winter, and the migration hasn't even. We're still waiting from the migrate from 3 years ago. There's still up to 8,000-9,000 foot elevation, and you know that's my opinion of it.
Okay.
You want the elk to come back? Shut it down.
Yeah, you've got a good point. I think with the amount of people peeling around on an average weekend. Or now even weekdays. Used to be weekends were busy. Now it's busy 7 days a week.
Yeah, I don't think anybody has a job anymore.
Don't give the Forest Service any more damn ideas.
Am I reading? I just want to make sure I'm reading this correctly. Looking at the sheet here, the 2009 or 2014 recommendation was 2,000 permits, and the 15 is 1,350. So it's a. I'm not sure I'm reading this right.
Which unit are you on? Which one are you looking at?
On the Wasatch Mountain Current Creek.
Yeah, on the Current Creek. Last year they had 2,000 permits that were passed, and we're recommending 1,350.
And the one right below it, 500 down to 150, and then 340 down to 320. So the three areas. The big areas on this, we are recommending fewer tags.
And in addition to that, last year we, what's that?
Those are the late season tags, right?
No, that's antlerless. But
that doesn't include the control.
It doesn't include the control. That's correct.
And the control are the ones just the deer hunter with a tag on there.
Yeah, and it, essentially what it is, this is in addition to the cuts that we made on the west last year as well. Because as we were showing, the conversation about just adding more hunters isn't always the solution. We'd rather use the hunters that are there. And I know there was a conversation about doing away with the hunts around Wallsburg and some of that stuff. I would plead that you don't, because a lot of those are to deal with private lands issues where elk are coming into agricultural fields, haystacks and stuff like that. And we'd rather give public hunters the opportunity to kill those elk than just issue depredation mitigation permits and some of that. And then one final thought with all this discussion was, you know, cutting off Highway 40 and some of that stuff. One thing when we did antlerless elk control permits, it's just something to marinate on. we wanted those boundaries to mesh with our deer and elk boundaries. So that way we weren't confusing our hunters, where a hunter has a deer tag and he goes outside of the unit or crosses a road and says, I'm in my deer unit, but I'm not in my elk unit. And that caused a lot of confusion 2 years ago on this unit, which when we included the West, the feedback we got from those sportsmen was, thank you, I don't have to guess on where this is at. So that's more of a social issue, but it's something that our staff dealt with quite a bit. So,
thank you. I'm going to marinate on that one. Any other deliberation or comments from the rack? All right, I'll entertain a motion. Larry.
I'll make a motion to accept as presented.
Motion is made by Larry, seconded by George. All in favor? Motion passes unanimously.
I think that this is probably a good way to go right now, especially with the elk committee meeting in the summer. I think a lot of this stuff can be worked on and then some adjustments made down the road for the next year. So.
I feel good about it too. Looks like it's in place to move the direction it needs to go. Our next presentation is the 2015 CWMU Antlerless Permit Recommendation by Scott McFarland, who is a Private Lands Public Wildlife Coordinator. Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As he said, I'm Scott McFarland, the Private Lands Public Wildlife Coordinator for our division. And this evening, I will be presenting the 2015 CWMU Cooperative Wildlife Management Unit Antlerless Voucher and Permit Review and Recommendations. And you like my elk picture there. I should have a caption on it, but
what's it saying?
I know she's saying something. You've heard of angry birds. This is angry elk. So, just kind of as an overview here, currently in the state we have 127 CWMUs, and that represents about 2.2 million acres, a little over that. 70 of those CWMUs have antlerless permits on them. We have 15 of the CWMUs were previously approved for antlerless permits. Last year was the big year when we had the majority of the CWMUs were up for renewal. And that's where you see the 55 of those CWMUs are going to require Wildlife Board approval for the antlerless on their new three-year CORs. They were already approved for bucks and bulls in their management plans last in our last December board meeting. So two of the CWMUs that were previously approved have requested changes. And in summary, we have 70 CWMUs that are requesting 319 private permits or voucher. They come in the form of a voucher to a CWMU, but they end up as a permit. And 1,250 public permits that will go through our public draw process for a total of 1,569 antlerless permits. And that's all the species, deer, elk, moose, and pronghorn. The way that the antlerless permit, the allocation or the ratio of public to private on the CWMUs is determined is from the buck and bull allocation or the percentage that they choose. For example, the CWMU chooses, for example, if they chose for their buck and bulls a 90-10, a 90% private and 10% public, all of the antlerless permits would go to the public. If they chose a 85-15 or 85% of the permits go to the private or to the CWMU, 15% go to the public, the CWMU would be eligible to have 25% of the permits, and the public would get 75% percent, and it goes down. 80-20 would go to a 40-60 split, and a 75-25 buck bull option would be a 50-50 split. On pronghorn and moose, it's always a 60-40 buck and bull split. They don't have an option on that. And if they do have antlerless permits allocated for that unit, it's a 40% private and public, 60% public split on antlerless. So That's basically how that works. So I'm going to go through the recommendations by region, and there's a lot of them here, so I'm not going to read them all, but I'll kind of do some of the highlights. On the right-hand side, we've got the recommendation is to approve. What that means is that there's an agreement between the CWMU and the division on the number of permits that are being recommended. The Wildlife Board approves these permits and the numbers finally, but all that means is just that there's an agreement between the division and the CWMU. Junction Valley, I'll start with the northern region here. Junction Valley is one that was numbers that were previously approved, and there's a requested change. They had set 10 2-DOE permits, a total of 20 permits. They wanted to change that to 7 2-DOE permits, so there would be 14 permits total for that. All the rest of these are, well, except for Deseret, are elk antlerless. Deseret has pronghorn doe permits, but these are all new or renewal ones that need to be approved for antlerless numbers. Northern region continued. Again, these are all new and renewal applications. In the southeast region, all of these, we have one change. The JB Ranch was previously approved on their numbers. They asked for an increase of 5 permits, and this is the 14 private and 21 public reflects that change, that requested change. And the division is in agreement on all these with the CWMU operators. Southeastern region continued. These are all renewals also. Maybe I'll just clarify. I know most of you know, but the CWMUs are all on 3-year plans, and so at the end of 3 years, they submit a renewal application to continue for another 3 years, and those numbers are all approved, both bucks and bulls and antlerless, for that 3-year plan, unless the division requests a change in those, usually in response to changing population numbers, or the CWMU themselves can request that change. So the southern region, these are all renewals. And again, this is the agreement between the division and the... if there's a disagreement, we would come back as a split decision and we present those numbers. So. Central region, we have we have one new, the Crab Creek, which was a previously old CWMU, but the rest of these were renewals. And Northeast region has the fewest number of CWMUs, but there's one new and two renewals, and these are the recommended numbers here, public and private. Okay, just so an overview on the permits, we'll break down on species. We have 7 2-DOE permits and 5 1-DOE permits. Those are all public permits for deer. For elk, we have 255 of the permits we've allocated to the CWMUs, and 1,125 of those would go to the public through our public draw. Pronghorn would have 64 private and 106 public permits, so a total of 319 permit of the antlerless permits would go to the CWMUs, the private side, and 1,250 would go to the public through a public draw. And that represents about 79.7% of the antlerless permits are going to the, of all antlerless permits in the CWMU program are going to the public. With that, thank you.
Can you go back to that very first picture?
Sure.
I've looked this over, and I do have somewhat of an ability to tell what these animals are thinking.
Okay, I'd like to hear that.
That animal is thinking, I much prefer George Holmes's hay over this second-class hay provided by DWR.
Okay. Would you like me to put that caption up there?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's
the last one.
Okay. I know that's not an antlerless animal, but that one?
No, the other one.
Oh, okay. That one?
So what's the success rate on those?
Normally, and I don't know, maybe Kent could help me out if he's gone, though.
Isn't it mandatory to turn in? Wasn't somebody saying
it's mandatory reporting, yes.
Mm-hmm. So we got to have a pretty good idea of success rate.
Yeah, and just off the top of my head, it's kind of all over the board, but I think average it's a little over 70% success. So, and what we do with the CWMUs is the biologists sit down with the operators, and they kind of have to design a hunt for the individual CWMU. Not all CWMUs or properties are created equal, and so it's easier for a CWMU. Well, it's easier to manage a half a million acre unit and have a bunch of elk to manage than it is on 10,000 acres. And 10,000 acres is the minimum for an elk CWMU. And so usually more permits on a CWMU does not equate to more harvested elk. And so we have to design these. And when people put in for a CWMU, they expect that there's going to be a little bit higher quality success because it's more of a control type hunt. So what the biologists do is basically set up a plan. And what in their management plan, they have a management objective of how many elk over 3 years that they need to harvest. And we have never held the CWMUs to that in the past, but we are going forward in the future. And there could be corrective action taken against them if they don't meet those management objectives. So.
Any other questions from the rack?
Yes.
I know in Wasatch County we have a pretty specific problem where we have a large tract of private land that is not a CWMU that holds a lot of animals. I know you try and work with those folks. Do you have that problem a lot of places, or is that fairly limited?
No, that's pretty much common to all the places that have high percentages of private land. I think it was mentioned before that people activity, not necessarily hunting activity, can disperse elk. And naturally on the private lands, there's going to be less, unless it's a subdivision or something, there's going to be less activity, and it's going to be more attractive to the elk to be there at certain times of year. So, it's kind of a problem wherever you have large tracts of private land.
Larry.
The CWMs set their season, correct? They don't have to follow the same seasons as everybody else.
They have a season that's set for them. They have a wider range of season. For example, on elk, they can go from September 1st to October 31st. Deer, they can go. They have two options. They can go from September 1st to October 31st, or if they meet certain criteria, they can go from September 11th until November 10th. But they have a range that they can, but basically within that they can set their own hunt dates.
My philosophy is I don't think anybody should be told what to do with their own private property, but this is a big issue of the elk going on to private lands. Is there a way, or maybe the board would put together a certain percentage of these, say, elk have to be hunted during the regular season hunt to help force the elk off private lands, CWMUs.
On the public.
This was an issue that was brought up before. It's going to be brought up through the summer and probably be proposed next year.
I'm not sure how to answer that because what we do is give them a pretty wide latitude to hunt their elk at different times. And if you look at the...
Right.
And if you look at some of the larger CWMUs, they pretty much hunt them every chance. They're hunted almost every week of their whole entire hunting season. Some of the smaller ones, they,
they have the ability to hunt, you know, just a small portion of that season. A lot of times their elk leave after they hunt them, but then they can't come back on too. So
it's the public's thinks all the elk are on private lands. Mm-hmm. I disagree with that. There are a lot of elk on private lands, but not mm-hmm. all private lands. They go to where the pressure is not.
Right.
So that is so it was stated that say 50% of those cow elk had to be hunted during the regular season hunt. So the public is maybe getting the general idea that the landowner is trying to persuade those elk to leave.
That's definitely a possibility. I mean, that's something we could add into a rule, or it'd have, probably have to be put into the rule, so in order to be enforceable. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So that would change.
It would take a rule change, I would think. Yes.
So fall back to the work group.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions from the RAC? KNC Norma, are there any questions from the audience? All right, we'll bring it back to the RAC for your discussion and possible motion.
I'll make a motion that we accept the proposal as presented.
Okay, a motion is made by Matt to accept as presented, seconded by Tim. All in favor? Motion passes unanimously. Okay, our next action item is the Mountain Goat Unit Management Plan, and that would be Dustin Scheibel. What's up?
My name is Dustin Scheibel. I'm a bighorn sheep and mountain goat biologist for the state, and I'll be talking about the mountain goat unit management plan updates. In 2013, we passed a five-year statewide plan for mountain goats, which required us to develop and or revise all our unit plans, and so I'll be presenting the recommended management direction for all of our current goat units. I'll start off with going over the statewide habitat modeling effort, and then go over the unit plan format, and then finish up by going over an overview of the changes from previous plans. So the habitat model that we used was based off a methodology that was developed by Gross et al. In 2002, where they found that if you put a 258-meter buffer around slopes that were 30 degrees or steeper, that would correctly classify 87% of mountain goat habitat. Since goats are more associated with the escape terrain than they are elevation, there was no elevation component to this model, so we ran it at 8, 9, and 10,000 feet and everything above to get a feel for how many acres were available on each unit. We used that amount of acreage then to influence our population objectives, trying to keep it, all of our objectives at no more than 6 goats per square mile. So here's a map of the goat habitat in the state at 10,000 feet and above, at 9,000 feet, 8,000 feet, and that's all the goat habitat above 8,000 feet in the state with the current goat units that we have. This statewide plan also, if you recall, in August 2013, we passed 2 unit plans for Mount Dutton and the LaSalle's, and we created those brand new goat units. Since those plans have already been passed, we won't be discussing those tonight. We'll be just talking about the remaining plans in the state. So the unit plan format includes a boundary description, the land ownership that's in goat habitat, goes over the history and current status for the unit, and then addresses any issues and concerns specific for that unit. And then there's three main parts of the plan that guide our management directions based off of population, habitat, and recreation. So an overview of the changes for population changes, there's two that we're recommending. One is for the Cache Ogden East Canyon area. This is formerly just the Willard Peak unit, but we've had a lot of goats dispersing from that area and establishing on adjacent ranges. And so this management plan would, and for this expanded area, would allow us to manage those goats that have left the Willard Peak unit. With that, we would recommend changing the population objective from 160 just on Willard Peak to 700 to include all the adjacent habitat. We would use 5 subunits in that area to maintain no more than 6 goats per square mile. The other change that we're recommending is on the tushers down in the southern part of the state, going from a population objective of 150 to 175. This unit is chronically over-objective, and we've seen little to no habitat damage, and so we worked with the Forest Service in this increase to an objective closer to the current levels. And since it's also always, or it's frequently used as a source herd, we also included additional language in there to promote more coordination between us and the forest when we do transplants. So summary of these objective changes, again, the Cache Ogden is an expansion area, and so it was going from 160 just on Willard to 700, so it's an increase of 540, and then with another increase on the tushers of 25, be a total of 565 increase statewide. Our old management plans, we were managing for just over 3,100, and now we were proposing to manage for just over for managing 3,700. The current population across the state's around 2,000 animals. Here's a map of the area for the East Canyon Ogden area expansion area. Currently, we only have a management plan in place for Willard Peak with a population of 160. These areas would have their own subunit objectives. So for the Wellsville, we'd be looking at managing at 75. The middle cache, 190, the remaining portion of the Ogden unit outside of Willard Peak for 200, and then 75 in East Canyon. So again, 700 across this entire area. There's a map of the Tusher unit. It's just a little bit more contiguous habitat, and again, it's been a very productive unit and usually at or over objective. But even with these, the population objective, it is the lowest density in the state. This table shows that the units on the left and the density estimate over on the far right, based at objective, the Tushers is the lowest in the state at 1.13 goats per square mile. The highest density is actually along the Wasatch on the Box Elder or Provo areas where we're approaching 4 goats per square mile. For habitat objectives, that portion of the plan, all plans include language that are supportive of habitat improvements and regulated livestock grazing, also supportive of coordination between us and the forest on vegetation monitoring. Currently, we are kind of going through a statewide effort to get a little bit better perspective of habitat preferences for goats across the various units. We currently have these GPS telemetry collars on LaSalle's, Dutton, Nebo. We also have them proposed to be put out on the Wasatch. And again, this is used to help guide vegetation monitoring efforts between us and the forest. The final portion there is the recreational objectives. These would simply just be consistent with the statewide plan, where consumptive uses would prompt us to recommend any goat permits to harvest 5 to 15% of the counted population and use nanny hunts and transplants to regulate population numbers. We also use subunits multiple seasons to maximize hunter success and try to maintain that at least 90%. The non-consumptive portion, we just continue to look to install interpretive signs and kiosks in areas that have in established goat areas, and then also to expand viewing events. It's quite a popular watchable wildlife viewing event where we have people in attendance of 300 to 500 people at some of these areas across the state. So again, we just look for expanding those types of opportunities. So in summary, there's 3 main portions of the each plan: the population, habitat, and recreation. We're recommending 2 changes to population objectives on the Cache Ogden East Canyon area and the Tushers, and then all plans being supportive of habitat monitoring and improvement projects. And finally, all the plans would be consistent with the statewide management plan on recreational objectives.
Justin, are you going to allow the goats off Willard to disperse on their own, or are we going to move some of them around?
I think currently in the short term, we're just going to continue to let them disperse. We still have managed for about 160 on the Willard, and so we'll be actually doing some transplants off of that unit just to maintain densities on the Willard. But others that move to these other areas in the short term would just allow them to continue to establish, but we may at some point do some transplants to bolster those adjacent areas.
All right. Questions from the rack? Questions from the audience? Good presentation. Bring it back to the rack for your deliberation. Sorry.
You're good. Thanks.
Thank you.
John Larson with the Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife, and we accept the division's plan as presented. And in addition to that, I would just say I appreciate the fact that you've gone as aggressive as you have on the one unit, going to 700. You know, from a sportsman's perspective, it's a once-in-a-lifetime draw that's actually attainable. I was talking with John Bear about that earlier, but secondly, and maybe even more importantly, is just from a general public perspective, and everyone that uses our resources in our backcountry, there's nothing better than seeing a mountain goat, and they're rare to see. If you find them, if you know where to find them, you can find them, but to increase those numbers, that just really elevates those odds, and I love it. I think it's great.
Thank you. Any other comments from the audience? All right, we'll now bring it back to the rack.
Motion to accept is presented.
Okay, have a motion.
Second.
From Carl, seconded by George. All in favor? Motion passes unanimously. We appreciate those of you guys who attended tonight. The board meeting to decide on the actions that we went through tonight will be April 30th at 9 a.m. in the DNR boardroom. Our next Central RAC meeting will be held May 6th. Thank you. Meeting adjourned.